Good afternoon, Dr. Daniel J. Guerra, and this is Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is the 7th of February, 2024, and we are going to embark on a new series of lecture phenotypes. And we've been doing biomedical portraits. We did 8 of them, and that probably ran up to maybe a total of, when you consider all the different subunits of each of those 8, somewhere around 100 lectures. So what I want to do now is change the way that I'm doing the lectures. So I like to do that. I like to get a different parallax. So presenting with a different point of view allows us to examine biochemical principles as well as individual etiologies. So I decided that the way I'm going to describe these next series of lectures is they're going to be biochemical mosaics. So there will be biomedical discussion, of course, but that's not the original emphasis in the exploration of the topic. What we're going to do is study event ontologies using a dialectical method. So if you've listened to my lectures before, you know what that means. If not, I will explain it as I go through the lectures, okay? So the first topic will actually be the overall impact of an enzyme in cellular systems and its potentiation of protein metabolism and lipid metabolism. So that's where the dialectic is going to center on. Okay? Now the protein is going to be phosphatidic acid phosphatase. It's a Kennedy enzyme. And it's very important for the synthesis of triacylglycerol, but also phospholipids and sphingolipids. Okay? And in signaling, because of the potentiation of phospholipase activity subsequent to or a priori to the phosphatase, okay? And you'll see all this when we get into it. So as a prolegomena, I went back to 2014, and you'll see why I went back there and started talking about autophagy and mitophagy, because this is all going to play a very significant role. So you recall that mitochondria undergo more or less a continuous fusion and fission throughout cell cycle. And those interconversions and turnovers map onto cellular events. What kind? How about bioenergetics, of course, because they're mitochondria. Autophagy and apoptosis, again, linked always to often to mitochondria. Hypoxia, and you can see the linkage there because of the requirement of molecular oxygen for electron transport chain. Cellular differentiation, that's a little bit more complex nuance. We'll get into that as we describe this phenomena. Mitosis, cellular development into tissue, and a rather florid association with many biomedical phenomena, inflammation, the general immune response, aging, and stress in general. So when mitochondria go through fission and fusion, that is also a component of its own quality control mechanics, where fusion contributes to mitochondrial maintenance and fission allows for replication of the mitochondrion, but also it allows for the removal of dysfunctional mitochondrial genomic mutations. Now, fusion and fission events occur at a regulated, I would call, vectorial manner. They are not cyclic, nothing in living systems is actually cyclic. You could say pseudocycles, but not cycles. And that's because we're dealing with an event. That means that the signature always has a delta T, change in time. And as time progresses from 1 millisecond to the next, if you looked at the biochemical snapshot in frame from the first millisecond and compared it to the second millisecond, they are not identical. They're anything but identical, even with that short time frame. Now, that means even though we can talk about, biochemical pathways known as the TCA cycle, it's not really a cycle because the carbon that's entering, either directly from acetyl-CoA or oxaloacetic acid, from pyruvate, either pyruvate dehydrogenase or pyruvate carboxylase, respectively there. Remember, you can also involve carbon into the TCA cycle by transamination reactions from amino acids into the various organic compounds in the TCA cycle, right? So it's an anaplerotic event. Plus, you also know the TCA cycle, okay, in scare quotes. One of its primary purposes is to oxidize carbon, right? And in so doing, generating reduced nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide and flavin adenine dinucleotide, which are then used to reduce molecular oxygen to H2O. And in so doing, generate a chemiosmotic gradient across the inner mitochondrial membrane, because that's what TCA pathway is, to pump protons back through an ATPase, an F0, F1 ATPase, generating ATP. So that's the whole bioenergetic story in, 20 seconds? Okay? So it's not a cycle. Even the tricarboxylic acid pathway is not a cycle, even though you can look at it as if it was like a clock, right? The top, you talk about acetyl-CoA entering. Somewhere in the middle, you'd be talking about alpha-ketoglutarate. Towards the end, you'd be talking about fumarate to malate to OAA. Right? And you know, you have dehydrogenase in the pathway. They're all regulated at multiple levels of allosterism, as well as the level of gene expression and interaction, protein-protein interactions of the proteins themselves with complexes that are associated within the mitochondrial mitosol, right? So just giving you that little bit of flavor gives you an idea of what I mean about a mosaic. It's a living system. So it is on. It's always on. And because it's until it dies. And so that continuation of living system, I want to be embedded in your mind when you think about biochemistry. And of course, the other major divisions of biology that feed into biochemistry. And yes, I said that, like genetics and physiology and anatomy, right? Okay. So, fission fusion of mitochondria, regulated vectorial manner of association with the rest of what the cell is doing in terms of bioenergetics and dealing with stress. So think also about the morphology here. Because there's fusion and fission events of mitochondria, that's going to play a role in mitochondrial shape, size, and distribution. And that's going to be linked directly to the peroxisome. And peroxisomophagy along with mitophagy. Because peroxisomes and mitochondria are two subcellular organelles that replicate autonomously from cell division. That simply means you can have more than one peroxisome in a cell, more than one mitochondria in a cell. And the actual number of those two very important organelles, those organelles that are involved in oxidative metabolism, means that the cell can induce systems to generate more peroxisomes and more mitochondria depending on need, and then reduce that number also depending on the lack of that now no longer required temporal association with organized biochemical event ontologies. Okay. So, and it turns out peroxisomes and mitochondria tend to turn over together. Not always. Doesn't mean there's one-to-one correspondence to the number of peroxisomes, number of mitochondria. No. But because they're both dealing with oxidative metabolism and both dealing with lipid metabolism in the very specific sense of membrane lipid turnover, there is a lot of coherence between peroxisomophagy and mitophagy. Okay? We've talked about this in the past. We're not going to talk about peroxisomes right now, though. Now that I think about it, we may bring that in this lecture series. All right, now, there are conserved GDPases that belong to a protein family called the dynamins. And what these GTPases do is mediate mitochondrial fusion and fission. So we talked about these in the past. These include the mitofusins, that's FMN 1 and 2. And then another really important GTPase known as OPA1, O-P-A-1, standing for optic atrophy 1. And they are required for the fusion of the mitochondrial outer membrane, the OM, and the inner membrane, IM, respectively. So the MFNs work on the outer membrane. The OPA works on the inner membrane. Now, there is migration of the GTPases when we get into the detail. Okay, but that's, respectively, you can consider it that way for now. You also have a dynamin-related protein 1, DRP1, and that mediates mitochondrial fission. So fission sites are physically linked to portions of the endoplasmic reticulum. So this is an endomembranous organized event. And those portions of the ER where co-integrated lipid synthesis obtains. Because you remember that complex lipid synthesis, prenyl lipids, sphingolipid, and acyl lipids, acyl meaning phosphoglycerol lipids. All three of those major lipid de novo pathways are synchronized and organized amongst various organelles and even some in the cytoplasm, such as de novo fatty acid synthesis. And we went over that a little bit. We're talking about cholesterol just in that last biomedical portrait, as I recollect. Okay. And we will cover this in more detail when it's necessary in this mosaic. Okay. So, disturbances in the dynamic behavior of the mitochondria have been linked to multiple diseases. One in particular that is very important in human biomedicine is neurodegenerative disease. Okay, and we'll get back to that later. Now, for example, mutations in the OPA1 will cause dominant optic atrophy, wherein the loss of OPA1 impairs mitochondrial fusion, and in so doing perturbs Christi structure, remember those invagination structures in the mitochondria, and in fact increases the fate of cells toward apoptosis. Overexpression of OPA, on the other hand, protects against various kinds of programmed cell death, apoptotic type stimuli. So what about OPA? How is it regulated then? We can ask those questions. Well, certainly transcriptionally, translationally, and post-translationally. The alternative splicing alone of OPA, the pre-mRNA, at exons 4, 4B, and 5B, will give you a total of 8 unique isoforms. And most of them have very specific tissue-dependent expression. So they play unique roles, and they're allosterically and otherwise thermodynamically regulated differentially. Okay. Now, the isoforms themselves can modulate different functions of the OPA. Remember, it's an inner mitochondrial membrane polypeptide, a GTPase. And that, of course, is indicated by that isoform-specific expression, but also experiments have been done to silence, using siRNA or knockout in mouse models, certain isoform-specific OPA-As. And so then you can look at the OPA variants, right? In fact, very specifically, the presence of proteolytic cleavage sites, so-called S1 and S2 sites. Those are encoded by exons 5 and 5B, respectively. Those add further complexity to the OPA expression system, okay? Site-specific sequence-ordered proteolysis, then, at those sites just mentioned, S1 and S2, involving the exons 4, 4B, 5, and 5B, right? Yeah. That can result in the loss of some of the transmembrane domain of OPA. And that will lead to its unique form of OPA, which is still has biological activity. It's called the S-OPA, which means short. So the loss of the transmembrane domain of OPA leads to the formation of S-OPA. Okay, and remember, it's OPA1, right? Now, if the steady state mature OPA1 undergoes a constitutive processing, proteolytic processing, at S1 and S2 sites, and that will lead to the accumulation of a non-cleaved long OPA1 and the short OPA1 isoforms. Okay, ultimately, that will be the first series of products, right? Now, mitochondrial fusion depends on the presence of both long and short OPA1. And they assemble into ensemble oligomeric complexes, which are also required to maintain the cristae structures that you see in microscopy. And you've seen in textbooks, of course. So there are various stress phenomena, including apoptotic stimulation, both endo and exo, which can disrupt those complexes and trigger a complete conversion of the long OPA1 to the short OPA1. When that occurs, you get a temporal inhibition of mitochondrial fusion, which can be repealed, right? Which can be repealed by more LOPA1, more long OPA1, which means nation transcription. Okay. Now, ongoing fusion experiments and events that are measured by those experiments will end up showing fragmentation of the mitochondrial networking. Now, that very interesting set of phenomena occur subcellularly because of this. You can generate during the processing of the mitochondria because of the activity of these GTPases, both the inner mitochondrial one, the OPA I was telling you about, and those FMNs, the outer membrane one, interacting, right? And different isoforms will carry out different functions. But what you can generate, for example, during nutrient stress, is an endomembranous selective signaling removal of damaged mitochondria. And those can be taken out by mitophagy. That's complete digestion of the remnant damaged mitochondria, right? Via the endolysosomal mechanisms. Or you can get progression of cellular autophagy, so turning on the whole response for the cell, starting with the mitochondria, then the peroxisome, then the rest of the cell, or indeed full organized programmed cell death. Okay, so endoproteolysis of the OPA1 is critical for mitochondrial integrity and for the quality control over maintenance of bioenergetics, phase one of the regulation for the cell. Now, besides proteases, as you might guess, are play a role here, right? For example, LOPA versus SOPA. And even though you're getting subunit interactions there, those are proteolytic products, right? Because you have the S1, S2 sides. So besides proteases playing a role, lipases, especially membrane lipid phospholipases, here's the other half of the dielectric, you see, are integrated into mitochondrial teleology, right? Focus purpose in the cell, right? All right. So there's a group of metalloproteases belonging to something called the AAA superfamily. And these were first described in yeast. So these are the yeast proteins YME1P, AFG3P, and RCA1P, for those of you who are yeast biochemists or geneticists. Now, those metalloproteases are involved in protein turnover, of course, but specifically respiratory chain complex turnover and assembly, because they're convertases, right? And that's all going down at the inner mitochondrial membrane first described in yeast cells. The human ortholog of those proteins, of those YMEs, plays a role in mitochondrial protein and lipid metabolism, and probably involved in many different types of mitochondrial pathologies, some of which are called sensu stricto mitochondrial-based diseases, right, that you probably have heard of. Now, the AAA protease, YME1L, I know that's a pretty lousy acronym there, but it's what's in the literature, is in the inner membrane of the mammal, inner membrane of the mitochondria, of course. And what this particular protease does, YME1L, is it carries out a balancing act between fusion and fission, because it processes that dynamin-like GTPase OPA. One. Okay. So when you do double knockout of cells, mammalian cells of YME1L, double knockout, you show an impaired anchorage independent growth. And that actually mimics detachment from the extracellular matrix. And indeed, because of that, will expose cells to nutrient and oxygen gradients that can lead to not cell death, but metabolic rewiring, right? Because you're altering the association of the cells because of the mitochondrial complement to the extracellular matrix. So the communication is from the extracellular matrix through the plasma membrane to the mitochondrial system because of that mitochondrial protein, that GTPase, that dynamin-like protein. Okay, let me check my time here. Certainly don't want to go over in the very first lecture in this new series, which I know I'm prone to doing. It could still happen, but I think I have enough time to move on with this a little bit more. Okay, now, cell growth can be restored when you add back YME1L. You can add back human into any given cell line, and it'll function. But it will not work if a construct is made such that the YME1L is proteolytically inactive as a substrate, which means you need that conversion, that convertase activity of proteolysis, okay, in order for that protein to function, all right? And this is simply moving from amino acid 543 going from a glutamate to a glutamine. Now, what that suggests is that obviously that GTPase OPA conversion is essential. So the YME1L double knockout cells don't show deficiencies in any basal oxygen consumption rate, which is a readout for electron transport, right? Or even in changes of NAD to NADH ratios, which of course has to do with the complexes, particularly complex one in the electron transport chain, but also think about the dehydrogenases in the TCA cycle. So there's no alteration in those changes and growth. And indeed, what occurs is that even when the NAD to NADH ratio is altered, the double knockout YME1L cells only are altered in their growth in that they take on an hypoxia-mediated growth curve. Okay? So hypoxia is induced by the double knockout of that metalloprotease. Okay? And it's linked to the OPA1 proteolytic conversion, of course, in the mitochondria. Now, all of that should be good, canonical, linear logic, right? Because the mitochondria is consuming molecular oxygen. So again, that's why you would get this potential for hypoxia, having an event ontology associated with those cells. Okay? Now, people have studied this, interestingly, by looking at acetaminophen toxicity. Yes, acetaminophen toxicity in humans, which can actually cause liver damage, liver failure, and even death. So there's a reactive metabolite from acetaminophen called N-acetylparabenzoquinone-imine. Very active metabolite generated from the metabolism of acetaminophen. And of course, how do you think that's carried out by cyclic P450 enzyme, particularly CYP2EU1? And that all plays a role in acetaminophen-induced hepatotoxicity because the NADPQI depletes cellular glutathione. And because of that, there's an interaction with multiple proteins, including mitochondrial polypeptides. And what occurs is those proteins form adducts. Then when they start forming adducts, it triggers mitochondrial damage response, and then immediately a necrotic event, okay, all going all the way to tissue dissimulation, kind of surpassing the apoptotic event, right? So that's how acetaminophen can cause mitochondrial dysfunction. The reason I'm telling you all this is because when you study that mechanism, acetaminophen hepatotoxicity, you get an insight into mitochondrial fission fusion in association with proteases. Ultimately, all this is going to be linked to phosphatidic acid phosphatase. Okay? Again, that's the enzyme that will take phosphatidic acid and generate diacylglycerol. Now, that's not a protease, but proteases are going to indirectly affect the activity of the PA phosphatase, phosphatidic acid phosphatase, which will then lead to an alteration in mitochondrial membrane phosphoglycerol lipid sequence within the inner mitochondrial membrane and the outer mitochondrial membrane, depending on which leaflet you're looking at. Okay, so you can see this lecture is going to be a while to fill out. Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry, Saying bye for now.